to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. Today's guest is Dylan Patel. Good morning, Dylan, and welcome to our podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so Dylan is a SemiWiki contributor. He also has his own website, semianalysis.com. I really enjoy his material, so it's good to have you here. First, let's start with how you came to semiconductors.
Yeah, so when I was a kid, you know, Xbox had the red ring of death problem, so I opened it up and fixed it myself rather than going through the warranty process. So seeing the inside really, you know, interested me, so I learned about, you know, how does it work. And after that, you know, mobile phones and gaming computers, you know, I got into that kind of stuff as well, you know, rooting my phone. So I started really learning the intricacies of, you know, the mobile phone platforms. And so I learned about that from there and dove into, you know, well, what's in a gaming computer, what's in a mobile phone, process nodes, and then started just continued going upstream to where nowadays I focus a lot on semi equipment companies, chemical suppliers, IP providers, et cetera.
Yeah, you know, you're not the traditional analyst, and that's very refreshing. I enjoy your approach, and you know, you take it from a different view, and certainly you're very analytical, and you have some excellent skills. But you know, it's different, and you seem to say what's on your mind, and you don't really worry about annoying some of the topics and some of the other vendors. So you've written some great material. What's your favorite topic?
Right now, I'm actually working on something where the NXP CFO sold about 75% of his stock, and analysts aren't going to touch that one if they want NXP to, you know, still like them. But I'm going to touch that one, so maybe NXP will be mad at me. But it's something that needs to be brought up, right? Why did he sell it? Is it because it's Samsung might not want to acquire them anymore? Besides that, I usually focus on AI chip companies, analyzing what's going on there, because it's a really wild, wild west field. Not enough focus on software, so I try and focus on the software as well, not just the hardware. And besides that, you know, general mobile phone like Apple, Qualcomm, MediaTek topics, as well as, you know, Intel, AMD, that kind of stuff, and the foundry wars. That's all fun as well.
Yeah, you know, the traditional analysts have to walk very carefully because otherwise they won't be invited to the party. But and you know, I'm in the same situation. I say things that that don't always you know, rub people the right way, and you know, it's just interesting perspective, but it's really good content, and it's things that need to be said.
Yeah, thank you. I think a lot of the reason some people can't say stuff is a difference in business model. You and I are not dependent on the same business model as many other folks are, so we can speak our mind more so, right? Other people have, you know, people above them that force a certain business model upon them, right? And I mean, it doesn't apply just for analysts, right? It applies to like Intel trying to enter the foundry space. Well, business model kind of makes that difficult.
Yeah. You know, Intel is an interesting thing because, you know, I had a issue with the Intel CEO, the two previous ones, BK, and you know, he said some things that just weren't true, and you know, I really gotten an argument with him, and we actually went pretty hard at it, but you know, the truth was on my side, so I had no problem standing up for it. And you know, sometimes CEOs have to say, you know, things that present themselves in a better light than maybe what's actual. And I think it's kind of fun, but it is a little nerve-wracking. But you know, he ended up losing his job, and it certainly wasn't because of me. But you know, he just made some bad decisions and some bad statements. But you know, sometimes the last Intel CEO I didn't have a problem with. You know, this new CEO, I don't know. How do you feel about Pat Gelsinger?
Yes, I mean, stepping back to Bob Swan, right? Like, I think he was a good CEO, but he didn't have the technical knowledge to wade through the corporate, you know, political, you know, warfare that's going on, right? He doesn't know whether, you know, let's say Habana's solution is what Intel needs to buy rather than developing the Nirvana AI solution, right? Well, in my opinion, right, and some other folks, purchasing Habana and continuing and cutting Nirvana was probably a multi-year step back for Intel's AI efforts, but you know, he doesn't know that. So maybe there's some politics involved there, right? Pat, he has the technical chops, right? And he has it from the whole way bottom up, right? He designed the 486. He was heavily involved in 386, and from there he just kept moving up and up and up, all the way to where he's working on software and systems with VMware. And I think with the semiconductor industry, you almost have to sell vertical systems now. You know, in the future, it's not going to be, you know, I sell this chip, it's I sell this system, or I sell this platform that has all this software that runs very well on it, that's built for it, that's tuned for it, that's optimized. Right? That's why NVIDIA has been so successful in AI. It's not their chips are the best, right? Their chips are good, but it's the software system and optimization and all of that stack that's really making them capable. And I think Pat really understands this. And then he also understands that Intel, you know, either has to be no longer a manufacturer or they have to put metal to the pedal. And so I like the decisions he's making. It's the execution I'm worried about, right? Can he execute on this? Can he catch up to TSMC on manufacturing? Can he catch up to others on design? Because they're behind in both, right? So that's a scary topic and an interesting one for sure.
Yeah, you know, what you said about NVIDIA is true. I call it an ecosystem, but, you know, it's the software, it's the tools, it's the libraries. I mean, they have the best AI ecosystem, you know, in the industry, and that carries them a long way. And, you know, if you want to compare chip to chip, that's fine, but you have to look at the ecosystem. And, you know, it's similar with TSMC. They have a huge ecosystem for the fabless chip guys, and it's been developed over what, you know, the last 30 years. And you know, Intel developing an AI ecosystem or a fabless ecosystem, it's going to be a little bit more of a challenge than maybe a lot of people understand. But you know, Pat certainly does know. And what you said about Bob Swan is correct. I mean, he did not have the respect of Intel manufacturing, and that's, you know, the most powerful, most important silo in Intel. But you know, what he did was, I thought was clever, was he signed that wafer agreement with TSMC, you know? And so he kind of put the internal guys on notice. He said, hey, if you can't get your processes out, I'm going to TSMC. And so I thought that was a pretty clever thing. But I don't know what Pat's going to do. You know, at some parts he says, you know, we're going to do most of our products internally or externally. You know, as I said, you know, Intel does 20% of their products at TSMC because of the acquisitions, like you mentioned, Nirvana and Habana and many, many other ones. So they're at 20% already, and now they're doing chiplets at 6 nanometer, chiplets at 5 nanometer, and they have this huge 3 nanometer wafer agreement with TSMC. So I think it's going to be hard for Pat to say, you know, we're doing the majority of our products and, you know, catching up with TSMC. That's a very bold statement. At some point in time, analysts like yourself and myself are going to hold him to what he says, right? But, you know, he's got a couple more years to go. But at some point in time, you know, he's going to have to make good on all these promises, right?
Yeah, definitely. And that's actually like a very interesting point on the 3 nanometer and, you know, the other wafer agreements, right? They're increasing usage of TSMC like crazy. If you've seen an Intel roadmap that goes out, you know, 4 or 5 years, it's like a shotgun almost because of how many different products, right? Because they've got almost yearly introductions in a year or two of products on, you know, their own node. And then they're also heavily using TSMC nodes. So you can just imagine, right, without getting into like details that shouldn't be spoken about publicly, that their roadmap is going to have tons of different parts that kind of overlap and mismatch. And I'm sure they'll prioritize their own fabs, but, you know, those wafers, you can't just cancel them and give them, you know, and not have any drawbacks, right? You can't just say, oh, no, we don't want this anymore. You'll lose the respect of TSMC, and there's probably, I haven't seen the wafer agreement, there's probably drawbacks, right? They can't just cancel huge amounts of wafers out of nowhere.
Yeah, you know, the thing with wafer agreements, you know, they're legally binding agreements, right? So I've been doing it for years. People don't really understand them, but, you know, when you sign a legally binding wafer agreement with TSMC, it's 2 to 3 years before high volume manufacturing. TSMC builds the fabs to make sure you get the chips. So, you know, when people say Intel's taking everybody else's chips, you know, I mean, it's complete nonsense. That's not how wafer agreements work. So, you know, I'm sure Intel could buy out of that wafer agreement and not take the wafers, but there's still a penalty clause, right? You can't just walk away from that big of an agreement. You know, TSMC increased their CapEx, you know, several billion dollars to accommodate Intel. So it's going to be a big agreement. But, you know, Bob Swan signed it. So now it's a different story. But yeah, there's going to be some payment due whether they take those wafers or not. But, you know, I think the interesting thing, Dylan, is Intel is going to be manufacturing on TSMC. They're going to have designs on their own 4 and TSMC's 3, which are fairly comparable. TSMC 3 is actually a little bit ahead as far as density and performance, but they're going to have their own designs on both processes, and that's going to be telling. And then AMD is going to have their designs on 3, and Intel is going to have their designs on 3. So it's going to be no more, you know, my process is better than your process. It's going to come down to design and maybe packaging as well. But I think that's a whole new ballgame, especially for us analysts and people who benchmark. It's a whole new ballgame. It'll be interesting.
That's the exciting thing is, you know, yeah, they're going to use 3, but they're not, it's not like this CPU is only TSMC fabs and this CPU is only Intel fabs. It seems more so like at least what they showed off with their, you know, the recent, you know, process node renaming event is that Meteor Lake, which is their, you know, 2023, if everything goes to plan, 2023 client CPU, it's going to have 3 chiplets, right? It's going to have a base tile. It's going to have a CPU tile, a compute tile, which has the CPUs, and then has a separate GPU tile. The GPU tile is 100% going to be TSMC, right? That's without a doubt. So it's really interesting that, you know, they're going to have multiple process nodes within, you know, one single package, and they're going to be able to, you know, de-risk different technologies separately. So maybe they'll be able to catch up on their time frames, right? Like, oh well, maybe the CPU tile doesn't work, so we can still repurpose it and use the last generation CPU tile as we move on beyond Meteor Lake. And the same thing applies to, like, you know, their data center. So the picture they showed of their 2023, I think it might be, you know, probably late 2023, 2024 server platform, but that's just my estimate. That has, you know, a lot of different tiles, and it looks like the IO is completely separated out, right? And it seems like Intel, something they've had a lot of problem with, you know, in the past, which is, you know, all these high speed SerDes for PCIe and, you know, DDR and all these kinds of IO type things are going to be completely separated out and always going to be on TSMC now. So it's like they can cut that issue and risk out of it, and they can focus on only a few things. So maybe that'll let them catch up technically in process node, but then you lose the ecosystem, right? They don't have all these SerDes. They don't have all these, you know, various different IPs that TSMC does as a foundry. And maybe that doesn't let them compete in foundry as well, but because of their packaging chops, it's okay.
Yeah, I think you hit the key point, reducing risk. So they're going to do whatever it takes, right? They can swap out tiles from TSMC or Intel or whatever they need to do to get these chips out. I think it's going to be an amazing period for semiconductors, because you're going to see a lot more chips faster, and that's what we all want, right? So what about the foundry side? Do you know much about the Intel foundry? You know, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I wrote a piece about this recently, right? But actually, I wrote a couple pieces about it, but they've been talking about, you know, they've got this foundry, and they've got 2 wins, right? And 2 of those wins are like, they're not actually wins, in my opinion, right? And so I sort of dove into this already, but one of them, it says it's packaging only for Amazon. I'm pretty sure this deals with Intel's co-packaged optics. And actually, optics, silicon photonics, is an area where Intel might actually lead TSMC. And it's a niche, right? It's not a massive market yet, but it'll get bigger and bigger. And if they can maintain that lead, you know, that might be how they got Amazon to agree to package with them, is because Amazon wants to package the transceiver directly onto their NIC, right? Or directly into their switches, because they're working on switches too. And then the Qualcomm, right? The Qualcomm, they said 20A, so that's like 2024, 2025 timeframe. It's more like Qualcomm just agreed to, you know, evaluate the process node, but Intel's out here like, yeah, Qualcomm. I mean, they have to do whatever they can to keep investor confidence, because everybody's, you know, well, if Intel keeps losing share, the stock is going to go to crap. But, I mean, it's interesting how they're pitching it. I think if they can actually get like big wins on the like automotive side for like 14 nanometer or their 22 FFL, which I don't remember what they renamed it recently, but if they can get like automotive and trailing edge wins in that area, that might be like huge, because TSMC, UMC, they're all tight in this for at least the next year, 2 years, right? And it's a perfect time for them to try and enter this, you know, trailing edge business and put it on all your completely depreciated fabs and just rake in the money.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, the Amazon thing I think is interesting, because I think if you look into it, you'll find that die is actually coming from Samsung. And, you know, Samsung doesn't have the packaging chops that TSMC and Intel have. So I think that's actually a pretty good market, is Samsung customers going to Intel for packaging. But, you know, I agree. It's just an example. It's not just the die. It's packaging and the other things are wrapped around it. But, and, you know, the Qualcomm one, I read your article on that. I thought that was excellent. I was going to write something similar, but you already did. You know, I know Qualcomm so well. And if you look at the history of Qualcomm, they do press releases with everybody. You know, if you look back maybe 3 years ago, you'll see one between them and SMIC. They were going to work on 14 nanometer together, right? It's a big win for SMIC. You know, everybody was cheering it. But, you know, SMIC never made it out with 14 nanometer in that time frame, and Qualcomm never touched it. So, you know, you're right. It's just a press release. And, you know, again, these things will come back and bite you. You know, Pat comes out and says, oh, we're talking to 100 different customers. You know, it's like, well, yeah, that's probably the entire, you know, ecosystem. You're lucky to get, you know, one or two, because, you know, on the leading edge, people are very concerned that Intel's not going to deliver, right? And so nobody's going to bet their chip or their company on that. But as you said, the trailing edge, that's very safe, right? I mean, it's known.
Yeah, but it's also so difficult to get people to, you know, hey, redesign your chip, right? I'm like, well, this chip is not like crazy margins. If you redesign it, it's costly, and your design platform and your PDKs and all of that are really crappy. So it's going to be expensive to redesign it.
Well, you know, the FinFET processes aren't compatible at all. You know, at 28 nanometer, you could move designs around, but Intel's 22 and Intel's 14 have no resemblance to TSMC. So it's a complete redesign, and it would have to be a new product. Nobody's going to take an existing product that's in production at TSMC and move it over to Intel. It'll be a new product. And, you know, the government, of course, is a good market. And I saw some announcements with Intel. That's an easy win for Intel Foundry, is, you know, they want it manufactured here. They don't need leading edge. Perfect fit. But it's going to be new designs. They're not moving designs over, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, Qualcomm is really like the only company that moves designs around so much, right? So they didn't do anything much on SMIC's 14, but at one point they were 20% of SMIC's 28 nanometer for some RF related parts. And of course they moved those around to other companies when the ban came down. And they're doing that right now with their leading edge, right? They've got a mobile chip that's basically the exact same specifications on Samsung and TSMC. And they say that's a future strategy. So I think it's a really interesting strategy from them, and that no one else is really doing, is just keeping nimble, keeping playing all the foundries against each other, Samsung versus Intel versus, you know, TSMC. And then even on like the RF side, they bring in UMC and Global Foundries to compete as well. Really, really interesting that they can do this, and, you know, almost no one else is really capable of playing the foundries off of each other.
Yeah, you know, everybody used to do that, but it was Qualcomm that actually started it. So, you know, I was actually working with them back then. And you know, what they did was they created their own design rule set, and it was a superset of TSMC and other ones. And what they would do is they would do their work at TSMC and create this design rule set that's specific to Qualcomm, and then take it to other foundries and say, hey, if you can make this chip, you know, we'll buy some. And, you know, it really sucked for TSMC, because they would do all the heavy lifting, and then they would get, you know, outsourced to UMC and Chartered and SMIC. And, you know, this went on for many, many nodes. And, you know, it was a little bit sketchy, though, because they did have TSMC's IP inside their PDKs and inside their design rules, you know, spacing and stuff. But, you know, TSMC kind of rolled with it, because, you know, they weren't really interested in suing customers. But, you know, with FinFETs, TSMC really got their revenge. You know, not only are they technically not compatible, but there's some pretty beefy NDAs you have to sign, where if your design group does a TSMC design, it can't do another competing foundry design for, you know, 18 months or some time. But they're trying to protect their IP a lot better. But yeah, Qualcomm was the master of second, third, and fourth sourcing. I remember one chip literally was being sourced at four different fabs, and, you know, that helped their margins. So good for them.
That's fantastic. So, I mean, this leads beautifully to the Global Foundries acquisition rumors, right? I mean, there's going to be a lot of regulatory pushback on that one for Intel acquiring Global Foundries. But to me, it feels like, you know, that's perfect hand in the glove, right? Lets them get a bunch of customers and people who know foundry business and people who have designed PDKs, not only for, you know, FinFET process nodes, but all sorts of, you know, very specialized stuff like GaN on silicon and Photonics PDKs, which GlobalFoundries has the best one currently, from what I understand, even though their manufacturing chops for it aren't as advanced, and all sorts of stuff like that, right? Like, it seems like a glove perfect glove fit for me. What do you think about that?
Well, I agree with you. You know, one of the problems being an IDM foundry, which, you know, Samsung and TSMC are an IDM foundry, is, you know, you're going to compete with your customers. And what Samsung did is they spun out their fabs on paper and said, okay, this is our foundry business. But, you know, they still do their own chips through the same unit and same guys. But on paper, it looks good. Intel could take that one step further by acquiring GlobalFoundries and have them be the front end for their fabs, not just the GlobalFoundry fabs, but all the, you know, Intel fabs. And, you know, that would solve somewhat of that problem of not competing with your customers, you know, having protected IP in a separate silo. But also, you know, as you mentioned, GlobalFoundries has some very, very unique technology, and, you know, they got it from IBM or whatever, and, you know, they've done very well with it, but, you know, they could use some help on the high volume manufacturing and the process technology stuff. You know, IBM does great process technologies, but not necessarily for high volume manufacturing. You know, they have a yield problem with some of the stuff they've done, but, you know, Intel obviously is experts at that. But, you know, what I think actually more so is that, you know, GlobalFoundries says they're going, I mean, I've worked with them since they started. I love those guys. But, you know, they said they're going to go IPO. And the truth of the thing is nobody's really ever seen their financials, right? Because they're private and they got funding from Abu Dhabi. And, you know, to go IPO, you know, they're actually doing very secretive, confidential IPO work. But, you know, at some point in time, they're going to have to open the kimono and show investors exactly where they make their money and how that much margins there are. And I just think that it would be better for Intel to acquire them and, you know, not go through that process, because I just don't think GlobalFoundries is well positioned to IPO for many different reasons.
Yeah. That's very interesting, because, I mean, like, yeah, like GlobalFoundries has lost money majority of years it's existed. You don't need an NDA to know that. You know that they've been getting money pumped in from Mubadala. And so they're not exactly profitable. You know, as of recently, they have started being profitable. Part of that is they just cut CapEx like crazy, right? So all of a sudden, you don't have to spend so much money and your fabs are depreciated, of course. But they also like, They kind of think that, I mean, from my understanding, the rationale for not going with a alleged Intel offer is, you know, well, right now we're in a semiconductor cycle, right? A very peak cycle. A GlobalFoundries going public now would be, you know, commanding, you know, say $25 billion or $30 billion is the rumored price. If you know, if we fast forward 2 years, GlobalFoundries technology becomes more trailing edge, more, sure, they have more specialized stuff in photonics and communications, but in general, their technology becomes worse, and they are not in a peak cycle where everyone is at 100% utilization. So are they going to command $25 billion, $30 billion? And if you take an Intel offer, you're stuck in regulatory hell for 18 months plus, right? That's, right. I mean, probably 18 months.
Yeah, I think it's a good deal all the way around. We'll see what happens. But even if Global does go public, as you said, there's really no upside, right? Because their process technology is stalled. There's a lot of you know, business they can grab from other companies, but you're just chopping up the same size pie. And, you know, most of the growth is going to come from the new nodes, and they don't have that. So, you know, Intel can grab them, you know, after IPO, right? So it doesn't have to be before IPO. In fact, it might even be cheaper after IPO, because maybe the peak semiconductor cycle will calm down a little bit. But I think it really makes sense, and I think it's in the cards. You know, just question is, how long is it going to take?
Well, Dan, so actually I want to ask you about something. The photonics is an area that I've been studying a lot. There's a lot of firms coming up in it, right? The whole photonics thing has been talked about for decades, but really right now, as we get into 400G transitions, it's becoming, you know, copper can't do it anymore, right? We have to go transceivers, right? It was with 100G, you had to go transceivers for certain distances, but for 400G, like, you can go like a couple meters and that's it. And that just doesn't fly. So all these networking cards are going to use transceivers, and we're seeing all these startups doing, you know, photonics-based processing and all that. What is your assessment of, you know, TSMC's capabilities there? Because they've got some clients, right? I mean, like Cisco is using them, and they're huge in the market. You know, they've got a couple like Velodyne, the LiDAR companies, but they've been really clamshell when I try and ask them anything about photonics.
Well, I know they have a lot of things in process. And you know, how I know is because of the ecosystem. So, you know, I work with the EDA companies, the IP companies, the ASIC companies, the services companies, and also the photonics companies. And, you know, Synopsys has been investing heavily in photonics, and they're closely partnered with TSMC. And, you know, TSMC doesn't have to do it themselves. They certainly have to have the manufacturing capabilities, but, you know, a lot of the ecosystem and the design is done by their partners. But you can tell, look at who's investing in it and who their partners are and who their customers are. But yeah, Cisco is one of them, but you know, just about everybody makes their chips at TSMC. So I can assure you TSMC is going to accommodate them either organically or inorganically.
What's the comment on inorganically there?
Well, through their partners.
Oh, okay, I understand. I thought you meant like an inorganic acquisition.
That too, but you know, it's usually, you know, they work heavily through partners, but they do acquisitions as well. And, you know, they also do a lot of research. Taiwan does have a lot of photonics research in the universities. I've been to a couple different photonics assemblies and seminars. Yeah, organically or inorganically, they could acquire stuff or they could partner with other companies. But, you know, it's a key technology for the future. So they would be stupid not to, and I can assure you they're not stupid. Well, this is a good place to stop. And I want to thank you, Dylan, for spending time with the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. We're definitely going to have you back. Great conversation. And, you know, we'll talk to you again soon. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And we'll see you next week.
And thanks. So, hopefully next time we talk about AI chips, then, because that's my favorite area.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.